Good evening, one and all, and welcome to Tabernacle Baptist Church here on this beautiful autumn evening. We are thrilled each and every one of you have joined us, particularly those of you that have joined us this evening by way of our podcast. We want you to know that whether you're listening to this podcast in the year 2015 or maybe even 10 years later, regardless, we want you to know that we're very glad that you've joined us. Tabernacle Baptist Church is a congregation located in the heart of Richmond, Virginia's historic Fan District in the middle of the city. And we're a congregation that have been alive and well for almost 130 years now and right here in this neck of the woods. And so regardless of where you are in the world or when it is that you're listening with us, we welcome you here to our little corner at Grove and Meadow. Tonight we continue our series on faith and sexuality under the good leadership of Dr. Art Wright and Dr. Tracy Hartman. There is a wonderful crowd here in the room tonight. We're looking forward to some good breakout conversations this evening related to difficult conversations. And so, again, if you are joining us tonight live in person, wow, it's good to see you. And for those that we can't see but are still here, it's awfully good to hear you. And so welcome one and all. We look forward to a good evening together.
We're so glad that you all are here tonight. We're going to ask you to again to come on up and find a seat so we can get underway this evening. Tonight, for the first part, for the first time all fall, we're not going to talk specifically about sexuality. We'll do that a little bit later in the evening. You'll have the opportunity to do that. But tonight, we're going to spend some time talking about how do you have difficult conversations. Certainly, conversations around sexuality can be difficult, but we have to have difficult conversations in a number of areas of our lives. So hopefully this will help you tonight in lots of different areas, at work, at home, in other with your families, in other venues. So what we're going to do is I'm going to just talk briefly about the whole process of having a difficult conversation, how to do that in a positive way, and then we're going to divide up into topics tonight, and you'll get to select a table about a topic that you want to talk more in depth about. So the second half of the evening will be for you to hopefully have a not too difficult a conversation at your table. So I'm going to begin with a question tonight. What is a difficult conversation? Somebody just throw something out. What is a difficult conversation? Something you don't want to talk about. Okay, exactly. Or anything that you have a hard time talking about can be classified as a difficult conversation. They're often hard because we fear the consequences of what will happen, whether we have the conversation or whether we choose not to. There's consequences either way, right? If we have that conversation, we're afraid we might be rejected or that we might be attacked or that we might hurt other people. So sometimes we avoid those. We put those off. But if we don't have those conversations, sometimes we might feel taken advantage of. Our feelings will fester if we don't get them out and talk about them. And we also deny the other person the opportunity to make some changes or to respond to how we're feeling if we don't have those conversations. So pros and cons or difficulties either way, whether we have those conversations or whether we put them off. So why do we have them at all if they're so hard? Well, there's several really good reasons. The first is the ability to have difficult conversations is one of the signs of a healthy relationship, whether it be one-on-one or in a larger system. Institutionally, we know that the long-term success and survival of many organizations depends on their ability to have difficult conversations well. We've had some of those here lately around our remodeling and other things that we've done. And that's partly because the ability to have difficult conversations is a prerequisite to organizational change and adaptation. We've got to be able to have the hard conversations and able to move forward. So those are some of the reasons why it's important to have them. But even though it's important to have them and even though we need to have them, many people see having a difficult conversation like throwing a hand grenade. The problem is you can coat a hand grenade with sugar, you can throw it hard, you can throw it soft. No matter what you do with it, you throw a grenade, it's going to do some damage, right? There's no way around that. Hand grenades just blow up and that doesn't go well. But if you choose not to throw that grenade, sometimes it's like hanging on to one that you've already pulled the pin out of and it blows up in your hand or in your face. So that's not always the right answer either. So tonight, my goal is to help us get out of the grenade business and have what we call learning conversations instead of angry message delivery kind of systems. How do we do that? How do we make a fundamental shift from lobbing a hand grenade to a learning conversation? How do we move from a message delivery stance to a learning stance? There are a couple of good ways to do that. The first one is to understand that in every conversation we have, there are conversations going on at three different levels. I'm going to tell you what they are briefly, and then we're going to talk about them a little bit more in depth. The first one is the what happened conversation. What are the facts here? We'll talk about that in just a second. The second level is the feeling conversation, what's happening at a feeling level for us. And then there's also the identity conversation. What's at stake for me here, and what does that mean? And engaging in difficult conversations successfully means learning to operate on all three of these conversation levels in any given conversation. So we really have to train ourselves to think intentionally about what's happening here on a number of different levels. Some things, of course, when we have difficult conversations, we can't change. Bill, if you and I are having a difficult conversation, I may not be able to change your mind. I may not be able to change the change how you feel. But we can certainly change the tone of the conversation and hopefully make it a productive conversation as we go along. So we may not be able to change everything, but we can also certainly change how we respond to a situation as it arises. So let's look at, first of all, at the what happened conversation. Often in the what happened conversation, these are the questions that are going on. Who's right? Who meant what? And who's to blame? We always want to blame somebody when something goes wrong, and we have a different conversation when that goes on. So the first one is we have this assumption about truth. Who's right? In any conversation, what's your assumption? I'm right, right? If I didn't have a dog in this fight, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So we almost always begin with the assumption that I'm right and you're wrong. We always think that you or they, somebody else, is the problem. But they think that we're the problem, right? So we start at fundamentally different places. Usually, a difficult conversation is not about the facts or about what happened. And if we pursue that end, we usually end up in a dead end. Because if we both think we're right, we both think the other person is wrong, we're not going to make much progress in the conversation. So the question is not about who's right in a and who's wrong, but about how are we interpreting the facts that we see and what judgments are we making about those. In the movie Annie Hall, here's a great example. Alvy Singer, who is one of the lead characters, he and his girlfriend are seeing a therapist, and he complains that they never have sex. And she says, "We constantly have sex." And the therapist looks at them and says, "How often do you have sex?" And in unison, they say, "3 times a week." So they were clear about the facts. They both knew how often they were having sex. But for her, it was all the time, and for him, it was not ever enough. So it wasn't the conversation about the fact that was the problem, but how they were interpreting that and the judgments that they were making about that. So we each make sense of the facts in relation to our own story and how we interpret that. So we need to think about how do we move away from proving that we are right to exploring and understanding each other's perceptions, each other's stories, each other's values, and look at how are we interpreting what's happening. We have to get curious about someone else's story and begin to explore that in order to be productive and to create a learning conversation. People almost never change their minds until they feel understood first. So one of our first goals should really be to understand where someone is coming from. Understand someone else's story enough to see how their conclusions make sense. So again, Susan, if you and I are having a difficult conversation, I need to listen to you carefully enough to get a sense of your story and why your position makes sense to you before we can even move up beyond that. So we need to get past the facts to how people are interpreting that and making sense about that. The second question is, who meant what? Kind of leads to the question of, what did somebody intend? There's a problem with intention, and we often make errors when we enter into a difficult conversation. We come at a conversation assuming that we know what somebody else meant. And when we don't know what somebody else intended, or when we don't know what somebody else meant, we'll make something up about that. And usually it's not very positive. You said that because you meant to hurt me, or you said this because you knew it would do damage. We always give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. We always assume that we have good intentions, don't we, and that we're operating out of those. But we tend to project not so honorable intentions on other people. What we need to realize is that our intentions are often very complex, and often they are mixed. We often come at things with mixed motives. Sometimes people act without intention, or they act with something that has nothing to do with us. And again, we interpret that differently out of our own stories and project blame where there might not be any. We may still be hurt from that, but people may not have had ill intent when they acted. So if we leap to unfounded conclusions about somebody's intentions, we can shut down a learning conversation really, really quickly. And this is becoming an increasing problem as many of us are working more and more by email, because it's very hard to read something that somebody sends and understand what the intent of the message was. A work colleague and I had a really difficult conversation about a year ago because she misinterpreted an email that I sent her, and we had to work through that. Didn't mean to hurt her, but the impact of that was hurtful, so we had to back up and have some conversation about that. One of the things that will help us do that is to try to separate what was the intent and what was the impact. So the first thing to do is say, what happened? What was the action? What did somebody actually say or do? And then the second question is, what was the impact of that on me? So maybe, you know, somebody said, it looks like you've put on a little weight lately. Maybe they didn't mean to hurt us, but maybe I've been trying to lose some weight, and that was hurt. The impact on that was hurtful, a statement to me. And then ask ourselves, based on that impact, on the impact that had on me, what am I assuming that that other person was trying to do? Maybe they wanted to say, are you ill? Is something wrong? Are you under a lot of stress? But I interpreted that in a different way. So what actually happened? What was the impact on me? And then based on that, what assumptions am I making about what their intentions were? And we kind of have to hold that as a hypothesis and not hold on to it as absolute truth until we find out what really is happening there. And that's hard to do sometimes because, again, we always think we're right and somebody else is wrong, right? And then often we want to ask who's to blame, especially if something's gone wrong at work. You don't want it to be your fault. You don't want the ramifications of that. But, again, in learning conversations, it's not about blame. I'm working primarily from a book tonight called Difficult Conversations, and one of the things they suggest is not talking about blame, but talking about contributions. How did different people in the room contribute to the problem? That blame is not helpful. Almost always, it's more than one person has contributed to something going wrong, whether it was miscommunication or timing or whatever, and that we're not looking at a blame to mete out punishment, but to say, how did we not see this coming, and what can we do so that next time we don't make this mistake again, are good ways to have the conversation instead of who's to blame and what are the consequences going to be here when we're working with adults. Of course, when we're working with children, that's a little bit different, but with adults, that's a better way to have that conversation. When we feel like we are being blamed, it makes our own defenses go up, and again, that tends to shut down learning conversations. So if we can avoid using that kind of language and talk about contribution and results, often we'll get farther. So that's a kind of a brief intro into the what happened conversation. Don't always assume that you're right. Work on the facts, work on intent, and try not to think about blame. The second conversation that's always happening when we have a difficult conversation is the feelings conversation. Especially in our professional lives, we tend not to deal with feelings. We'd we think it's inappropriate to take those to the office. But feelings are always a part of difficult conversations. The book goes as far as to say difficult conversations are based on feelings, and we just need to acknowledge that and move on. Often our feelings are an integral part of the conflict, and again, how we handle them is absolutely key. Unexpressed feelings can burst into a conversation, sometimes at inopportune times if we're trying to keep them out. Sometimes they'll just kind of bubble over. Unexpressed feelings, if we're holding on to those, can make it difficult for us to listen to somebody else. If I'm thinking about how angry I am or how hurt I am or how frustrated I am, it's hard for me to listen to what you're trying to say. And they can also take a toll on our self-esteem and our relationships. If I feel like I'm always stuffing my feelings, that's going to be problematic. So the key, though, is not to vent those inappropriately, but to express them carefully without judging or, again, casting blame. Instead of saying, you made me feel, say, I feel, and own where we are about that is a good way to help with that. So, again, acknowledging that it is a feeling conversation to allow those in a productive way to be a part of what's happening. And then finally, the identity conversation. This is perhaps the most subtle and most challenging part of difficult conversations. We need to ask ourselves, what am I saying to myself about me in this conversation? Some of the things that tend to underlie difficult conversations are questions like, am I competent? Am I loved? Am I worthy to be a part of this? So when I go in to ask the boss for a raise and he says no, my automatic assumption might be, well, maybe I'm not worth what I thought I was, when in reality it might just be a tight year and a raise isn't available. So again, you can see how an assumption would lead to an identity issue for you. We have identity issues around difficult conversations at church all the time. Somebody moves an important piece of furniture that they didn't know was important and somebody gets all riled up about that, you might say, if you're a newcomer, what's the big deal? It's just whatever, fill in the blank. But to somebody who has spent their life in a place and who may have, given a memorial to make that piece of something, possible here, to move that or to remove that creates some identity issues for that person. That's an important part of their history and heritage, and if we don't deal with that sensitively, we've created an identity issue and a big deal where we didn't think there was one. So we get, my students, seminary students particularly, find themselves getting caught up in those kind of things all the time when they don't mean to, but they're important when we think about them. And then the second question that we need to ask is, what's at stake for you or for us in this conversation? What's the bottom line here? So those are some things to ask when we think about the identity piece. So it's a lot going on when we have these difficult conversations, but if we kind of train ourselves to think about these three layers of conversation, we can engage in them pretty easily with some good practice. So how do we begin to set the stage for a learning conversation? And I hope that that's what we'll have tonight when we get around the tables in just a few minutes. First of all, learn somebody else's story. Here are some things that are helpful to ask. What information do you have that I might be missing here? What things don't I know that would help me understand what's going on here? What past experiences do you have that are influencing this conversation? What were your intentions? What did you mean when you said, how did my actions impact you is a great question to ask somebody. How are you feeling? How do you think I contributed to what's happening here? How does this affect your identity? What's at stake for you here are good questions to have when we're having learning conversations. The next thing is be willing to express your views and your feelings, again, in a non-threatening way and as matter-of-fact a way as you can. And then finally, begin to problem solve together. What will improve this situation going forward is a great question to ask. Can you brainstorm creative ways to satisfy both persons' needs? If conflict still exists, if you can't reach agreement, is there a way that you can come to an equitable understanding or a fair way to move forward from where you are? So those are some things that will help us again, in lots of different areas, to have difficult conversations. But one of the things that you all have expressed is that you would like the opportunity to talk some more together about some of the topics that we have addressed over the course of the last several weeks. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to set 3 or 4 tables. We'll see kind of how folks sort, and we'll see how many tables we need to have around each conversation, and just allow you to address some of the sensitive topics that we've had conversation with. Art has put the ground rules on the tables again, and I'm going to put up or leave this up so that you can think about difficult conversations. So the three things that people have expressed the most interest around as we've moved through this are the topics of homosexuality, premarital sex, and then how to talk to your children and teenagers about issues related to sex and sexuality. So we're going to let you choose which one of those issues you might like to have more conversation about tonight. And Kristen is going to kind of facilitate the conversation about how to talk to your children and teenagers. If we need more than one table, we'll send another facilitator that way. So if you are interested in that conversation, if you would make your way to where Kristen is. Up front here, if you would like to talk about the homosexuality issue, I'll join this table in a minute. And again, if we have more than one table full, we'll get another facilitator there. And then, Art, where are you? In the back. Art has agreed to facilitate a conversation about premarital sex. So if you would like to have more conversation about that in relationship to what we've talked about over the last couple weeks, I encourage you to kind of move that way. Again, if we'll kind of see how the crowd sorts, and Sterling will also facilitate a table depending on how it fills up. So if you'd like to talk more about how do we talk to sexuality with our kids and teens, head that way for Kristen. If you're interested in more conversation about homosexuality, I encourage you to kind of gather here. If you want to talk more about premarital sex and issues related to that, if you would sort to where Art is. There are some discussion prompts on the table. We have about almost 40 minutes here tonight. We've left some good time for conversation. So feel free to think about, as you're beginning to move, what if Scripture had to say about these issues? How might Jensen's markers inform this issue? How does your own story inform this issue and what you bring to the table? So I encourage you to have a good, healthy, even if it might be difficult, conversation.
So while you other two tables were cackling in the back, we're having very serious conversation up here, I hope you know. So a couple of things as we wrap up tonight. One, what a gift it is to have a safe place for us to have such important, sensitive conversation. And so just a reminder, the ground rules are the ground rules. If you don't remember them, you should look at them before you go. There is the assumption of of confidentiality. Podcast projects what Art and Tracy say and me every once in a while, but not what you say. And so please, confidentiality is important. Two, a reminder that we're not here next week, so keep that in mind, but we will be talking about guilt and shame as it is connected particularly to sexuality the following week. Often, unfortunately, sex and guilt and shame go hand in hand. Those words just get lumped all in the same hat. And so we hope that you'll continue to process this and engage. And my guess is around your tables tonight, something clicked, or you resonated with something you heard from somebody. You know, you have permission to have coffee together when you're not in this room. Follow up. Find somebody that said something that connected with you and say, hey, could we have lunch? Could we go to coffee and keep talking about this? As Baptists in particular, we believe that where, of course, two or more are gathered, God is there, right? We believe God's there if it's just one. But we'd also believe that the way we interpret Scripture is not in isolation, but rather to sit down together and talk together and discern through the Holy Spirit guiding us. We've tried to lay out very deliberately through the good guidance of Art in particular, the scriptural stuff, that we wish the Bible were more specific. And there are a lot of areas where it's really not. So go home and listen to the podcast. That is an invaluable resource that we've created. For the first week ever, Art has created actually a list that has all the hyperlinks connected to the title. So all you got to do is click on the title you want to hear, and it will be there. We'll post that in the next couple of days. It's on Facebook today already, and we're going to find a dedicated spot on the website here once the series is over. But just so you know, we've created that resource for you. And so go back and listen to a session again, or if you missed it, listen to it. Find an opportunity to have coffee with a friend. Let's continue this good conversation, okay? You all are great. A friendly reminder that this Sunday is Christ the King Sunday. It is, if you don't come from a liturgical tradition, that means it's the last Sunday of the church year. We celebrate what God did looking backwards, and then at the end of the service, we bring our pledges and commitments forward, and not just financial, even commitment to pray. At the end of the service, with our eyes casting forward, and there's this wonderful moment at Tabernacle where we take that Christ candle now that we can barely keep lit because it's so worn out, and we recess out with it. A child and adult will actually walk it out of the room, and then an unlit Christ candle for the next year is brought into the room, and we prepare for Advent, which begins the next week. And so Sunday's a big deal is what I'm saying. Be here Sunday. Come prepared. Pray about your pledges for the year ahead as we try to make plans for ministry in the year ahead and anticipate a really good day. And so blessings to you. Have a great night. Choir, thanks for the good work that you're doing on Wednesday evenings, getting ready for Advent especially. God bless you all. Thanks. Good night.